This GX on Agriculture podcast is brought to you by Haas Nissan in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
GX on Agriculture with Doug Falconer.
Good afternoon and welcome to GX on Agriculture. Coming up on today's program, we'll speak with Mike Hall, who is the research coordinator at the East Central Research Foundation, about some grant money they've received from the Western Grains Research Foundation. The Saskatchewan Association of Rural Municipalities is expressing great disappointment with the cancellation of the Keystone XL pipeline by the United States. We'll speak with SARM President Ray Orb about that. The Saskatchewan Pulse Growers recently named Bell Pulses in Bellevue as the recipient of its Pulse Promoter Award. We'll speak with Tony and Francis Cadet about that. And we will continue our interview with Andrew Dixon, the outgoing general manager of Manitoba Pork, who is into his last week of work at that facility. All that and more coming up on today's edition of GX in Agriculture. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
With Phil Spieback from Precision Weather. Phil, it was a very cold start to the week. Wind chills of minus 44 in some areas, but on the bright side, it looks like we could be in for a warming trend as the week progresses.
Yeah, we're going to shake the extreme cold by the middle part of the week, and it's worth noting that that wind chill is not really caused by much wind. The wind has not been strong. It's likely to stay through the day, through tonight, through tomorrow, 10 kilometers per hour or less most of the time. It's just the cold air, and any sort of movement in that cold air causes the wind chill, which means even if the wind is still and you are moving in the wind, you're creating a wind chill that actually takes these temperatures, which are dangerously cold in their own, and creates that bit of a wind chill, which makes them that much more dangerous. So don't let the still wind make you think it's okay to be outside with exposed skin, because the wind chill at these temperatures, dangerous within minutes for frostbite. The extreme cold warning likely extends through Tuesday night. Temperatures this afternoon should get above minus 30. We'll get a few more degrees out of the day. The wind chill, though, stays in the minus 30 scan. Even with that little wind, the wind chill is cold. Tonight, clear sky will fall back to minus 34, pretty close to this morning's readings and pretty close to the wind, too, with very little wind. The wind chill getting into dangerous levels, close to minus 40 to minus 44. Tomorrow, sunshine, minus 27 is the high, very similar to today, very similar wind, very similar sky, very similar wind chill, minus 30s. Tomorrow night, the difference is temperature will get down to minus 31. That's not much different, but then it starts to rise, and the wind comes up a little bit. The end result of that mixture of the warming temperature and the increasing wind will be the wind chill still dangerously cold, minus 35 to minus 40 much of the night. But from there, we shake the extreme cold. Not the cold. It's still going to be below normal, but the extreme cold will break. Cloud cover mixing with partial sun on Wednesday. A little bit of a breeze, 15 to 30, behind near minus 21. So the wind chill is still minus 30s. The wind will settle down for Wednesday night as this next system passes, partly to mostly cloudy on Thursday, minus 15, and right about where we should be on Friday, partly sunny sky for the high minus 11.
That's Phil Spieback from Precision Weather. Temperatures around the region this hour, the Paw is at minus 30 degrees. Swan River minus 29, Dauphin minus 27, Brandon, Show Lake, Russell minus 24, Roblin minus 26. Regina is at minus 20, Saskatoon minus 31, Hudson Bay minus 29, Broadview, Mooseman minus 22, Indian Head minus 23, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington minus 28. The Yorkton-Melville region has a sunny sky, calm conditions, 74% is the relative humidity, the temperature is minus 31 degrees. Yesterday, Yorkton reached a high of minus 26 degrees and dropped to a low of minus 33 degrees. There was no precipitation recorded in the 24-hour period ending at midnight last night. The normal high for this date is minus 11. The normal low is minus 23. The sun rose in Yorkton at 8:37 this morning, and it will set at 5:28 this afternoon. Extreme temperatures for Manitoba and Saskatchewan yesterday. The Manitoba hotspot was Sprague at minus 11 degrees. The cold spot Lynn Lake at minus 39 degrees. The Saskatchewan hotspot yesterday was Maple Creek at minus 10 degrees. The cold spot Key Lake was in fact the national cold spot as well at minus 47 degrees. And that's a look at your agriculture weather. GX and Agriculture will return right after this. Welcome back to GX and Agriculture. I'm Doug Falconer. It's 12:23. And the East Central Research Foundation farm near Yorkton is getting a $60,000 boost from the Western Grains Research Foundation. Research coordinator Mike Hall says the funds will be used for equipment to help increase research projects.
First, start by saying that a research farm here in Yorkton, we're lucky that it's a collaborative effort between the East Central Research Foundation and Parkland College. And we were able to use some money that ECRF had received through Morris Cebulski Fund to leverage money through Western Grains. And so that money that from those two funding sources, the Western Grains and Morris Cebulski, will go towards purchasing items such as a 3/4-ton truck, which of course we need for pulling trailers and going to get water for the sprayer and a whole bunch of other things. But a new item for us will be a weigh wagon. And that's new for us in that we haven't done a lot of on-farm work. And so we mostly are plot research work, you know, and it's done right at our research farm. But sometimes we get into situations where, you know, we'd like to go off-site, address a specific problem. Or in some cases, there's research projects where, you know, a field scale approach is better, you know, like something like flea beetles, for example. You know, small plots don't lend themselves real well to that kind of research because flea beetles, well, they move. They don't stay still. So they can move from plot to plot when things are small, and that sort of messes up the data. So we also are getting a dump trailer. And we need that for cleaning off some plots, silage plots, for example, you know, or if we want to take off some barley to plant some winter wheat, for example. And there's other things we can use it for. So we got a dump trailer out of it and a clipper and some screens. Of course, that's for all kinds of projects, you know, cleaning the grain from all our trials. Like, we have a small plot combine that goes through the center of these plots, and then after each plot, we end up with a bag of grain that ultimately needs to be cleaned before it's weighed and tested. We are also, through Western Grains, trying to get a custom-built dryer. And we have the C-can for it, but we're still kind of scratching our heads a little bit how to turn that into a plant dryer.
So this is all very helpful to increase your capacity.
Well, the grain dryer will be for, you know, a lot of forage type experiments, but not even just forage experiments. We've had some flax experiments where we needed some drying of the plant samples at harvest and this sort of thing, and we've had to send them away to other research stations. So they can be quite busy, so we can't always depend on being able to use somebody else's dryer. So yeah, we're trying to convert a C-can into a plant dryer. We'll put metal shelving inside and have air blowing through it is the idea. Some of the other things too are, like, we want to get some custom built bleachers as well that go on trailers. We've been in the past been putting picnic tables on trailers, and we have another trailer that is sort of a mobile bleachers situation, but we could use some more capacity. Well, the last tour we had, I think we were close to 120 people, so we need more capacity to move people around. Actually, the tour before last tour was virtual. We didn't have anybody here on the farm last year, but the year before we had quite a few people.
So what are some of the projects you have planned for 2021?
Well, we tend to do a lot of fertility work, and we probably can carrying on with projects that look at trying to increase grain protein, with late season applications of nitrogen in wheat. We do a lot of stuff with test weights in oats, for example. We have grain millers right in town here, and so we're interested in trying to manage test weights, with fertility, so that we don't mess up acceptance for milling because your test weights have fallen too low. And we've certainly found some interesting things there in the past, and I'm sure we'll continue on with that kind of work. There's also, it's not just the test weight aspect. We're kind of curious about what we could do in oats to increase protein as well. Now, oats aren't paid on a protein basis right now, but the end user is certainly interested in sourcing product that's high in protein. So things can change in the future. And, we do disease work and novel fertility products and that sort of thing. So we've made a lot of applications for a lot of projects, but of course we don't know exactly what's going to be funded at this point. We also like to continue working on malt barley, and we certainly have had some interesting results from that in the past. Like just writing one up here the other day, and nitrogen management for malt barley kind of depends on what barley variety you're growing, because the old net calf varieties, well, they're not very high yielding, and you got to be a little more careful with how much nitrogen you apply to a low yielding malt barley variety compared to a much higher yielding malt barley variety, because you're more likely to go over protein, get too high of protein in most cases. So yeah, there's a whole number of things we're doing, but like I said, we don't know for sure exactly what projects are going to.
Mike Hall is the research coordinator with the East Central Research Foundation Farm that works in collaboration with Parkland College right here in Yorkton. It's now 12:30 on GX and Agriculture, and it's time for the AgriView portion of our program. That's a presentation of Peebles Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
GX 94, AgriView.
The Government of Canada is investing $162.6 million in the Canadian Food Inspection Agency over the next 5 years and $40 million per year on an ongoing basis. It's to maintain the integrity of Canada's food safety system, protect the health of plants and animals to safeguard the food supply, and provide ongoing support to Canadian businesses in their export and import activities to overcome pandemic interruptions and global trade volatility. This investment in the CFIA will bolster an already robust and effective regulatory system, allowing the agency to continue to respond effectively and quickly to import and export activities, perform surveillance, and digitize forms and documents. This funding will increase the CFIA's inspection, surveillance, and oversight programs within Canada to respond to the detection of new food pathogens, invasive species, and animal diseases that threaten Canada's agricultural and natural resources. CFIA digital services will also be expanded so that more Canadian exporters and importers can benefit from efficient and automated tools for risk management and inspection. Ottawa says this investment ensures that Canada will have one of the most modern and effective food safety and plant and animal protection systems in the world, further enhancing Canada's reputation as a trusted trading partner. CNNCP Rail supplied a combined 86% of hopper cars ordered in Grain Week 24, an increase from last week's 74%. Reflecting an increase in performance on both CN and CP. CN's performance improved for the fourth consecutive week, supplying 81% of cars ordered. CP's performance increased significantly week over week, supplying 92% of cars ordered as compared to 71% in the prior week. CN and CP combined will enter week 25 with 1,527 outstanding cars, a net 31% decrease of 700 from the 2,227 cars outstanding at the end of last week. The change in the outstanding car count represents an increase in the number of outstanding hopper cars on CN by 127 and a decline in the number of outstanding hopper cars on CP by 827. The Board of Directors of Manitoba Pork has announced that Cam Dahl will be joining the organization as its new general manager, effective February 22nd. Dahl joins the organization with an extensive background in Canadian agriculture, encompassing both crops and livestock, having most recently served as Chief Strategy Officer for Cereals Canada. Prior to his time at Cereals Canada, Dahl served as General Manager of the Manitoba Beef Producers, as a Commissioner for the Canadian Grain Commission, and as Executive Director of Grain Growers of Canada. In addition to his professional experience, Dahl has served on the Scientific Advisory Committee for the Canadian International Food Security Research Fund and is a past president of the Canadian Agriculture Hall of Fame. Dahl holds a Bachelor of Science in Agriculture and a Master of Science, both from the University of Manitoba. The Board of Directors also wishes to thank outgoing General Manager Andrew Dixon for all his contributions over his 16 years with the organization, and they congratulate him on his retirement. Three agriculture groups in New Brunswick have decided to join forces. The Agricultural Alliance of New Brunswick, the National Farmers Union in New Brunswick, and Really Local Harvest have formed the Agriculture NB Collective. The three organizations collaborated on several files together in 2020, including the lifting of a ban on temporary foreign workers and sounding the alarm about the strain on the food system. Anna Bellevo, CEO of the Agriculture Alliance of New Brunswick, says working together will give a stronger voice to that province's farmers. And that's a look at the AgriView portion of our program. Please stay tuned. GX and Agriculture will return right after this.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Falconer. It's sunny and minus 31 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at 1 o'clock. The Saskatchewan Association of Rural Municipalities is expressing great disappointment with the cancellation of the Keystone XL pipeline by the United States. SARM President Ray Orb says Ottawa is not pushing hard enough to convince the U.S. of the benefits of the pipeline to move Canadian oil to the U.S. Gulf Coast.
Well, you know, I can tell you we're really, really disappointed that U.S. President Biden has canceled the permit to let Keystone XL go ahead into the United States. And we think that they should have reconsidered, and of course it's going to have a lot of repercussions what happens here in Saskatchewan and Alberta in the oil industry.
What are some of the impacts on Saskatchewan?
Well, you know, there are going to be a lot of job losses, you know, in both of our western provinces that produce the majority of the crude oil in this country. And of course some of that filters back to taxation. You know, some of our rural municipalities in Saskatchewan are going to be at a disadvantage because they actually would be entitled to more taxation when the pipeline was completed and when it started operating. So that's going to filter down, you know, into the rural communities in our province, and it's really unfortunate that this has happened.
You also see some problems with the negative impact of increased oil transportation by rail and by trucks.
There's been, you know, a lot of competition for oil movement in Western Canada, a lot of it, you know, by rail, also by truck. And that is to the detriment of the agriculture industry, you know, moving grain, moving livestock products, things like that, feed, you know, feed grain. It's just really unfortunate that we have the safest way to move oil in this country and that is by pipelines, yet we can't seem to get pipelines built.
So do you see the pipeline as being very beneficial for Canada getting oil to market, but also for long-term stability for energy in North America?
Well, you know, it's something that SARM has supported, you know, our energy corridors. And, you know, the Keystone XL obviously is part of a really important energy corridor. And we know that there is good demand for crude oil. Some of the reports that we've seen, crude oil is not peaking out yet as far as demand. So we need to have our products moving, and that includes oil and gas, where the companies that need to move this product need to get that to market.
Do you see projects like this important for economic recovery because of COVID-19?
Well, one of the most important ways for our country to recover is to make sure that our industries like, you know, agriculture, oil and gas production, lumber, and mining products can all move to park position in a timely basis. And that is something that we haven't seen happening as of late. And something that's, I think, really upsetting our industry. It's really hurting our provincial economy that goes a long way to stimulating job creation and things like that. And we think this is going to be a detriment. It's going to really slow things down and make our recovery because of COVID really unfortunately.
That's Ray Orb of QPAR. He is the president of the Saskatchewan Association of Rural Municipalities. It's now 12:40 on GX on Agriculture, and it's time for the livestock market conditions.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for February are trading at 116.67. That's down 5. April live cattle trading at 123.20, up 67. March feeder cattle trading at 144.72. That's up 57. April feeder cattle trading at 146.80, up 67. February lean hogs trading at 70.32, that's up 40. April lean hogs trading at 76.45, up 30. And that's the livestock market conditions. It's now 12:41 on GX in Agriculture. And Saskatchewan pulse growers recently named Bell Pulses in Bellevue as the recipient of its Pulse Promoter Award. The honor recognizes those who have made a significant contribution to the provincial pulse industry. Tony and Francis Gaudette were guests on this month's SPG Pulse of the Prairies podcast.
We have operations in Bellevue, started in 1978. We also started a second location in Duck Lake in 2001 to do green split peas only at that time. So Bellevue did the yellows, Duck Lake did the green splits. And from there, about 10 years later, I think we bought some property on the other side of the elevator in Duck Lake and started our flour mill there.
As mentioned, Bell Pulses handles a variety of processing.
We do splitting, both yellows, greens, chickpeas, and fava beans. And we make flour out of the yellow split peas. We make flour out of the skins, the pea hulls. Clean them up, grind them up, ship them into the pet food market. So yeah, it's been busy. I think last year we hit a record. We shipped out 100,000 tons, which was biggest year ever.
Tony says some of the pulses are going into pet food.
It's protein and it's quite a bit cheaper than meat. So as far as if it's a big part of our business, it's not. But at the same time, it opens the door for us to be able to market. When you split peas, you get a lot of skins. You gotta take the skins off. Back in the day, we were almost having to give this stuff away. So getting a better value for it was a big positive for the business itself.
And he says the pulse processing business has changed over the years.
Pulses in Western Canada were mostly done by family-owned businesses. And now it's getting to the point where it's multinationals that have kind of come in and invested a lot of money, even though I don't know if I agree with how they run their business, but I guess they have to run their business like they want, and we'll run ours like we want.
And that's with an emphasis on quality.
We're mainly pea-based, maybe faba beans, desi chickpeas. Our focus is on added value and quality.
Because you got to remember our quality. Our brand is worldwide known, and our quality speaks for itself. We got to make sure that we make sure that the quality that goes in those bags is what the customer wants.
Francis gives a lot of credit to the company's employees.
We've got many dedicated employees that have been with us since day one. Like, one guy's been here since 1978, so he's been here for 42 years. And we got many more after that, 30, 35 years. But we've grown from 10 employees back then to we're over 50 right now. So many thanks to them, too.
The Gaudettes also have high words of praise for both farmers and plant breeders.
We're one of the leading producers, quality-wise, bushels per acre. Like, the farmers are doing very well with pulses. They're getting better yields with better seed, you know, so that's where we're heading.
The breeding program, especially for lentils and peas, was phenomenal in the past 15, 20 years, which gave the farmers the edge.
Bell Pulses processes provincially grown peas, chickpeas, and faba beans and sells them to the world. The company received the Pulse Promoter Award from Saskatchewan Pulse Growers earlier this month. It's now 12:45 on GX and Agriculture, and we'll return to the program right after this. Welcome back to GX and Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner. And the general manager of Manitoba Pork says the public's understanding and appreciation of the economic contributions of the pork sector to the provincial economy has increased substantially over the past 16 years. Manitoba Pork is the organization that represents the interests of the province's approximately 600 swine operations. However, Andrew Dixon is set to retire on Friday after 16 years as the organization's general manager. Andrew, how are international trade relations at this point?
The United States is a huge market for us. If it's not number one, it's number two or number three, depending on whether we're selling weanlings or we're selling pork. We're integrated in lots of ways with the United States. All our pricing formulas in Canada are based on USDA numbers. So whatever happens in the United States will affect us directly here in Manitoba. The good thing is we've been able to try and diversify away from the United States, and so we've been able to increase our exports, but mostly to countries like Japan, where we've added, our processors have been able to add more value, bring more money in, and we've been able to open up the Chinese market, and we've been able to significantly increase our exports to the Chinese market, which has helped enormously in terms of ensuring that we can have continued production. But you have to work at these things. So we've met with various delegations. We had the Brazilian hog organizations all came to one of our meetings. We regularly have guests from Japan, various farm organizations from Japan come to visit with us. We've met with some large Chinese companies and their staff to talk about potential investments in Manitoba. We support through our national organization the activities of the Canadian Pork Council and how it's built up its relationships with its counterparts in the United States and Mexico. And we also support financially the efforts of Canada Pork International in its work to expand and develop new markets overseas. And with the trade agreements like the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, and then the new NAFTA agreement, and then the European Union ones. These have all brought opportunities here that we need to open up and explore and see if we can develop products that will bring more value. The more processing we can do here in Manitoba, the better, and the more high-end products we can ship out, the better. One thing I have noticed over the years, too, is a major increase in the activities of our breeding and genetics companies. They've become a major player in Manitoba because of our high biosecurity. Our farms are well spread out. It's a cold climate. And we have an international airport. And in fact, they're in the process of building a special hangar so we can ship pigs by air. But it's really good to see that all develop, especially the quality of the facilities and the sophisticated technologies they're bringing into some of these. One of them actually has a whole body scanner providing images on sows and so on. So it's amazing the sophistication of the equipment that's now being brought in.
What have been your proudest accomplishments personally as general manager of Manitoba Pork?
Well, I'm very oriented towards meeting our program objectives, and I think we haven't always been successful. Some of them were still underway. Like one of the things that we spent quite a bit of time on has been this issue of trying to develop an equivalent to crop insurance for livestock. And we don't have anything for beef, for dairy insurance, or pigs, for losses, for mortalities as a result of diseases or other events. And so I spent quite a bit of time on that, and we're still working away at this. We've got a major project underway right now to try and develop a package. The poultry industry has been quite successful in developing packages for AI and salmonella and other poultry diseases, and we're trying to model something on it. But that would be if we can pull off something that's got decent premiums, decent coverage, and meets the needs of producers, I think it'll be another tool to try and reduce some of the risk in the industry. And that's one of the things that I've been trying to do over the years, is to try and provide more knowledge out there. So, for example, on buildings, like we commissioned work by engineers to give us costs of construction, so we've got a good handle on what it costs to build a farrowing barn or a nursery barn or a finisher barn, and we put that out there so that producers can see it. We set up a development corporation to help producers who are thinking of rebuilding their operations or expanding, so they can they're not alone in terms of dealing with the local municipalities. There's some resources that could be brought to bear to help them out through the process, and these are significant. I mean, well, I can remember back in the 1990s when there's a lot of expansion going on. We had public meetings with 200 or 300 people at them, and there were major rows. I can remember two meetings I went to where during presentations where the police had to be called to restore order. So it's, fortunately, we're not like that anymore. And I think this effort to try and sort of reach out to local government, reach out to local communities and talk to them about developments, we can reduce some of the conflict and get a more positive attitude. And now we're getting rural municipalities contacting us, asking us to come out and visit with them because they'd like to see some barn developments. And that's a very different approach than we had, say, when I first started. Now, we've had our issues with the former provincial governments about the environment and the impact of the industry on things like Lake Winnipeg, and I think we've convinced the politicians that there are other issues, much more significant issues affecting things like Lake Winnipeg. The pig industry has a minor role to play in terms of trying to control some of the algal problems of Lake Winnipeg. But that was a major effort by our council to try and turn around public opinion on that. And I think we've been reasonably successful, but it's something you have to invest in all the time. When you're dealing with urban audiences, you can't make assumptions that what people know, and we're constantly probing them, talking to them, reaching out, into Winnipeg and the urban centers in rural Manitoba, so that we can explain what our industry is about and why we'd like to see more development and the positive impact it has on the Manitoba economy and society.
What are you seeing in terms of an increasing level of consumer support for the hog industry in Manitoba?
Well, one of the things, we just did some recent focus group testing, and, you know, people are telling us it's, and they have some concerns about, you know, how we raise our pigs. But on the other hand, they like the products. Very rarely do we have people say they've had an unsatisfactory experience. They just want us to be careful about how we raise the pigs. They understand we have an environmental impact, but no worse than anybody else. But they do appreciate the jobs we've created in the province. When we talk about, you know, I mean, there's like 13, 14,000 people now that make their living in one form or another out of the pork sector. That's pretty critical, and people are very supportive of that. They know that we try to be responsible in our workforce in terms of protecting them, making sure it's safe to work in the plants and so on. We've had a very successful immigration program in terms of trying to settle people into communities. I mean, the Maple Leaf plant has transformed the city of Brandon in terms of as an economic reality for that community, and similarly for Neepawa and the surrounding areas. The plant has transformed the community. We'd like to see more of that.
That's Andrew Dixon. He's the outgoing general manager of Manitoba Pork. We will conclude our interview with Andrew coming up on tomorrow's program. It's now 12:56 on GX and Agriculture. Please stay tuned. Your commodities update is coming up next.
Commodities update.
Canola futures are trading up across the board this afternoon. March canola trading at $670.80. That's up $21.20. May canola trading at $652.40, up $16.60. March Minneapolis wheat trading at $6.26 per bushel, up 13.5 cents. March Kansas City wheat trading at $6.29 1/4, up 16 cents. March Chicago wheat trading at $6.50 1/4, up 15.75 cents. March corn trading at $5.12 per bushel, up 11.5 cents. March soybeans trading at $13.47 per bushel, that's up 35.25 cents. March oats trading at $3.54 1/2, that's up 9.25 cents. And that's the commodities update. We'll have the Farm Bulletin Board right after this.
Farm Bulletin Board.
The Manitoba Ag Days Innovation Showcase Grand Prize Champion and Farmer's Choice Grand Prize Champion have been announced. The Innovation Showcase was truly touching the whole world, as they had voters from Canada, the United States, China, Mexico, the United Kingdom, Brazil, Sri Lanka, Japan, Australia, Hong Kong, Bangladesh, Taiwan, and Thailand. There were 44 entries this year in the 7 categories of the Innovation Showcase presented by Manitoba Ag Days. For more information of all 44 entries, you can just go to www.agdays.com/innovations. The grand prize champion is from the Ag Tech category. Adaptive Agricultural Solutions Incorporated was there with their product, the Bin Stick. The Bin Stick is the next evolution in grain cables. Bin Stick is an electronic and mobile-ready rigid, modular, expandable, and portable grain bin probe that contains temperature and humidity sensors for improved grain bin monitoring and grain drying. Adaptive Ag Solutions takes home over $17,000 in cash and prizes. The Farmer's Choice Grand Prize champion is from the Farm Built Solutions category, sponsored by the Manitoba Cooperator. Bar C Innovations, with their Quick Pin Hitch Pin, was the winner. The Quick Pin is a new, innovative, and redesigned hitch pin, making for faster, easier unhooking of implements. It's perfect for balers or other implements in case of fire, gravity wagons, anhydrous tanks, and unhooking with one-man operations. Bar C Innovations takes home over $12,000 in cash and prizes. And that's all the time we have for today's Farm Bulletin Board. It's now 1 o'clock on GX and Agriculture. And turning to the GX 94 Precision Weather Forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions, an extreme cold warning remains in effect for today. Sunny skies, winds east-northeast at less than 10 kilometers per hour, and a high of minus 28 degrees. For tonight, clear, winds northeast at less than 10 kilometers per hour, but a low of minus 34 degrees. For tomorrow, sunny skies, winds east-southeast at 6 to 12 kilometers per hour, and a high of minus 27 degrees. For Wednesday, cloudy with some partial sun, winds southeast at 15 to 30, a high of minus 21. For Thursday, partly to mainly cloudy, a high of minus 15. And Friday, partly sunny, a high of minus 11. In the Paw, it's minus 30 degrees, Swan River minus 29, Dauphin minus 27, Brandon and Shoal Lake Russell minus 24, Roblin minus 26. Regina is at minus 20, Saskatoon minus 31, Hudson Bay minus 29, Broadview Mooseman minus 22, Indian Head minus 23, Wynyard Wadena Kelvington minus 28. The Yorkton Melville region has a sunny sky, calm conditions, 74% is the relative humidity. The temperature is minus 31 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for GX on Agriculture for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.
CJGX, a Harvard radio station serving Saskatchewan and Manitoba. We are GX 94.